Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Hour two of the Chuck Oliver Show. Talking college football, been doing it for a decade, 9 states and 66. I appreciate the blessing. And if you listen to this program, you know I come to praise Lane Kiffin, not bury him. But I will say Lane may be setting himself up for a very remote brand of criticism. And he's actually trying to take a step in the other direction, not to avoid criticism, but to, I guess, avoid injuries. If you haven't seen Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin and QB and the really athletic lineman, they have all announced earlier this week that we're not going to have an actual football game or something that resembles a spring game on Saturday. We're going to have the Grove Bowl games. Think like an NFL Pro Bowl version of some things around a football, like a football field and some equipment. They're going to have 7-on-7 skills challenges, etc. Here's the particular brand of danger. Y'all remember the NFL running back, Georgia running back Robert Edwards? He basically had his career ended by playing flag football on the beach in Hawaii before the Pro Bowl. If he would have gotten hurt in an actual game, even the Pro Bowl, stuff happens. When you get hurt screwing around, playing around, and you do whatever, fans do not understand that. Why was he in a water balloon fight? Why was he playing flag football? Why was he doing whatever? Proof you can get hurt doing anything, but I'm just saying the perception among, if he's out there busting his tail playing an actual game and gets hurt, well, it happens. So I'm just telling you, it's a completely new approach from Lane Kiffin, and we will see how it goes. Want to welcome on right now all manner of things to talk about with Ole Miss in the ahead season. From Sports Talk Mississippi, you know him, Michael Borky. Welcome back, friend. How you doing today?
I'm doing really well. How are you? I'm glad the spring games is picking up steam because Joey Chestnut is going to be eating hot dogs on Truth. The field during the Ole Miss spring game. I don't even know where to begin with it.
So I always guess that, like, I remember Will Muschamp back in the day, Sumlin at A&M. We have a couple of this year. Coaches who say, sorry, guys, injuries, just can't have a spring game. Is that the situation, and in particular on the offensive line? Because that's usually a blind spot in spring. You know what? We just can't block anybody, you know, protect the quarterback, so we're just not going to have an actual game. Is that the situation, or did Lane just want a different approach?
I think it's in all of the above. So they've got a ton of injuries. Jackson Dart had an off-season procedure. Now he's practicing, but still just recovering from that. Both of their expected starting offensive tackles are recovering from off-season procedures. You've got the incoming Juice Wells, who is on a scooter right now. There's just a bunch of guys that are dealing with a little bit of stuff. So it's partially that. Lane Kiffin generally, at least since I've covered him, doesn't appear to really like spring football and especially spring games anyway. He's never really been a big fan of them. Last year's spring game was kind of a joke. They essentially told the defense before the game, don't tackle. And if you tackle, you're going to get in trouble. And if you don't believe that and you watch the broadcast, Lane Kiffin actually yelled at a defensive player during the game when he was mic'd up for his interview because he tackled somebody to the ground. So it's been something that he has never really liked anyway. And I think there's a third element to this, and it's the spring portal window that's about to open. They don't want their players being tampered with. Yeah. If they divide the team and they have, let's say, a wide receiver who's running second team, they don't want a coach from, you know, Oregon or whatever saying, hey, I saw you were running second and third team in the Ole Miss spring game. Guess what? We need a wide receiver. Why don't you hop in the portal, come on over here, and we'll get you some catches. So I think it's an all-of-the-above thing. Kiffin doesn't like it. They've got some injuries. There's a fear of tampering, and as a result, they are having a Pro Bowl, essentially, or the modern Pro Bowl on Saturday.
Michael Borky talking Ole Miss. He does that every day throughout the entire state on Super Talk Mississippi. You can get him on YouTube as well. Go find Michael talking Ole Miss and football and related items digitally. All right, well, let's talk about a few names on defense. Tell me what you think maybe they already know about them, because I don't imagine we'll find out anything about Walter Nolan on Saturday, will we?
No, we won't. And I mean, we're not going to really learn anything about any of them. Apparently, Princely Umanmielen, the Florida transfer, has been everything that they were hoping that he would be. Now, you know, he hadn't played a game yet, so we'll see. But they've really praised not only the athleticism, the physicality, but the professionalism. Like, he's come in and hasn't had any issues, like, acclimating with the team, learning the system. They're really, really pleased with the guy that he is on top of the athletic presence that he has. So that's the guy that they really desperately need as well. Jared Ivey, you know, he was good a year ago, but he's not the kind of rush end that's going to dominate and take over a game. He's capable. He can play at the next level, but that's their best returning rush end. So they needed somebody to come in and be feared by opposing offenses, and Umanmielen can be that guy with some more consistency, and he has openly talked about how he needs to improve from that perspective as well, getting a better motor. But that's the guy that they desperately needed in the portal, and they got him, and they're very pleased with how he's acclimated so far.
All right, I think it was last year, and Michael, tell folks, I'm not exaggerating, am I? Was it 6 or 7 corners that they brought in through the portal last year? And I know that they've had a couple of more this year. Trey Amos is who I really want to ask you about, but like, they've actually kind of found some talent and some footing in the transfer market in the secondary, whereas like LSU, they're doing fruit basket turnover every year in the portal, and they haven't been able to crack that code. Talk a little bit about the secondary and some of the new names, particularly Trey Amos.
Yeah, Trey Amos is another guy that they really needed. And Lane Kiffin gave a really interesting quote about Trey Amos. So he was talking about Alabama players in particular. Now, after Saban left, they only got one, and it was Trey Amos. But he said with a guy like Amos, you know exactly what you're going to get, for one, because it's a Nick Saban-coached defensive back. But two, they don't have to worry about his attention to detail and work ethic, that with other portal players, there's been a adjustment period, whether, you know, maybe there's a little bit of an attitude or something like that. They've experienced that in the past. But Trey Amos, he said it's very clear that he has played under a Nick Saban program for a while, because he came in and knew exactly what to do and how to work, and they don't have to worry about him at all. But yes, they are very pleased with him as well. But I found it so interesting that they have liked him the most, because you can tell that he was coached by Nick Saban. That if you, like, Kiffin obviously coached under Nick Saban, but if you didn't know that he was a Saban guy, you would pick up on that quickly because of his mannerisms, the way he talks, the way he prepares, and things like that. So, wasn't a starter for Alabama last year, but the metrics and all that say that he certainly was capable of doing so, and did so in spelling a couple of guys for injury last year. But he'll be CB1, as they call it. He'll be cornerback one. He'll be the guy that will get the toughest assignment every week, and they're really they're expecting big things, and they love how he has acclimated as well.
All right. As Lane Kiffin, I'm sure, believes, and you and I have already, you've already referenced, Jackson Dart, he doesn't need any foolishness on Saturday. Talk about Walker Howard, who was almost perfect a year ago in the spring game. Austin Simmons, the kid who reclassified 2 years up from Florida. A.J. Maddox, just go through the other quarterbacks who there may be more of an opportunity on Saturday to eyeball.
Yeah, frankly, I'm disappointed that there's not going to be a spring game, because I was really excited to see our first look of Simmons versus Howard. That's the expected quarterback battle next year after Jackson Dart leaves, Walker Howard, the transfer in from LSU, obviously, and Austin Simmons, who's playing baseball for Ole Miss right now. He's a lefty reliever, and he's been, I mean, the brightest spot on a baseball team that is woefully underachieving this year. He's got electric stuff, and he's been really good on the mound. And we're not going to get to see them duke it out like I was hoping we would, because that's going to be the battle next year. The lefty Simmons, the young guy, and the LSU transfer, and Howard. we haven't seen either one of them take a meaningful snap in college, obviously. So I'm disappointed that we're not going to get a look there, but that will be your quarterback battle of the future. It's definitely those two guys. Now, knowing Lane Kiffin, maybe there's a portal one that comes out there, yeah. But the expectation internally is it's going to be one of those two guys. Simmons, a better athlete than Howard. Howard, more experienced, been around the program for a while, has a big arm and all of that stuff himself. But, I mean, we'll get to see them sling it a little bit. They are going to do some 7-on-7 work, but we're not going to get the look from the two of them until the season begins. But, Chuck, what's so interesting about that is Kiffin doesn't want either one of them to leave, obviously. And what happens when you get a huge lead against Furman? Who do you run out there first? Or what happens if Jackson Dart rolls an ankle? You have to play one at that point. So Kiffin's going to have to try to battle balancing quarterback two reps with both of these guys because he doesn't want one of them to think, oh, well, it's not me. I'm going to hit the portal and leave. So that's a very low-key thing to watch this season for Ole Miss is if Jackson Dart gets banged up or if they start blowing somebody out, who's going to take the snaps? Who's going to play quarterback? And with Austin Simmons playing baseball, are you convinced that a guy can play quarterback and be the starter in the SEC missing half the year playing another sport?
Yeah, if I want to keep him in the program, and you mentioned the baseball again there at the end, I'm going to make sure that the baseball coach and I are on the same page, and the baseball coach can true love him from that standpoint, whereas I sort of do, but I keep the other quarterback in the fold as well. So it's a balancing act. There's no doubt about that. But Lane Kiffin, I mean, I'm telling you, I get the other coaches involved. Last question for you, and I've told folks before, I mean, I went to an SEC school and I was in a fraternity, but I was kind of a boring and like responsible fraternity member. Lane Kiffin has said he's going to have fraternity and sorority members on the field participating in these games on Saturday. I'm going to tell you, even as a quote, responsible, boring fraternity member, if you had invited me onto the field for an SEC spring game, I might've lost my mind. What is Lane Kiffin going to do with the fraternity and sorority members on Saturday?
So I think they're going to be involved in a lot of it. I think you're going to see guys catching passes and throwing passes and stuff like that.
This is a bad idea, Michael.
But you remember that show Pros versus Joes?
Yes.
I think we need a humbling, like a societal humbling, because there are some guys. I mean, we've gotten texts into our show this week, guys talking about how they could break 100 at Augusta National on tournament conditions. So I think we just need a bunch of guys to get humbled. Like, you think you can run a route on Trey Amos? Please show me that you can do that and watch him pick you up and plant your body into the turf. But I want to see them eat against Joey Chestnut. I'm more excited about seeing a bunch of half-drunk frat guys eating against Joey Chestnut than I am seeing them throw a pass on the football field, honestly.
Yeah, that now, see, if that's what they're going to do, have compete in the hot dog contest, see, that's the way you want to go with this. But you're right as far as, I'm going to pass block again. No, we're not going to do anything of that like that. Michael, I appreciate you coming on and shedding a lot of light on a brand-new way to do a spring game on Saturday. Thank you, friend.
Of course, Chuck, anytime.
From Supertalk Mississippi, it is Michael Borky. So, Pros versus Joes, that's interesting. Was it Jesse Holly? There was a show on NFL Network, and what Pros versus Joes was, they got like a former major league pitcher, John Rocker, and he threw against a guy who said, I bet I could hit a former major league pitcher. Jesse Holly was something different. I think there was a reality show where the Dallas Cowboys said, we're going to give a contract. It's like somebody's going to make the team.
Yeah, the show was Fourth and Long in 2009.
That guy,
that happened.
He actually played, and he got into games. And I want to say that either he had a long touchdown where he got caught like right near the goal line, or he made some plays. So Jesse Holly got to be in the league. If it's a pros versus you know what can always happen? No, let me take that. I said always. Do you know what there was always a very small chance of happening? Arkansas, back in the early 90s, might have been a Jack Crow thing. Might have been Danny Ford. Arkansas went out to the intramural fields to find a quarterback. And there was a kid out there, Brandon Simmons, man. They had had an injury and an injury and an injury and an injury. And finally, they're like putting flyers up. Did you play quarterback? Have you played quarterback before? Were you injured? Bet you could pass a physical. Like, they didn't put that last part on there, but it was kind of implied. And so no bites, and they're kind of trolling the intramural fields. And there was a kid playing intramural football, and they're like, all right, young man, you're now quarterback at Arkansas. So I guess I was going to say that can always happen. No. There's always a small chance of that happening, because when I can give you an example that was like 30 years ago, that's not always going to happen. That's it's happened three decades ago, and Chuck remembered some of the deets. So, yes, I guess by that stretch, it can happen. Pros versus Joes in lieu of an actual spring game. I'm telling you, inviting fraternity boys onto the football field, that's an opportunity for it to go another way. It's just silly. So, I kid. We're going to break and continue next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Thursday on the Chuck Oliver Show, and we got a slew of spring games coming up, and we've been talking a lot of the different teams that have already wrapped up. Auburn this past Saturday, Missouri a month ago, Bama this coming weekend. There are times when the ABC after-school special, or you know, whatever the made-for-Disney movie storyline, sometimes that stuff's real. And it's also a reminder, and understand the context of this, we lose sight. It's still just college football. As in, there is a chance that the second corner on like a team in the Big Ten. Do you know what the second or third corner, a guy who plays full time, he actually does after he's done playing at Iowa or Michigan? There's a chance he becomes an accountant. Not everybody at that. Some people, they're just football players who were good enough to get a scholarship. And then they line up against NFL guys. So it's still just college football. In the interest of accuracy, November 6, 2000, from the Washington Post. Article title, Hog Day Afternoon. John Rutledge had been playing intramural football at Arkansas. Houston Nutt needed a quarterback. His first four were injured. So he goes out to the intramural fields, and he get there was a, they, all right, well, who walked on? And they had some guys that had tryouts. And Rutledge had said, I can play quarterback. And so they went and so they rounded him up, and they're like, all right, you get to play Saturday against Ole Miss. What? It was Tuesday. He played in the Saturday game against Ole Miss. It would be nice to say he let a comeback and got carried off. No. I think he threw about 10 passes. They lost by two touchdowns. You got to play for Arkansas. There was a story that if it was more important, and it's not, it's April. And Derek Dooley, as I remember, he sent the campus police to some walk-on kicker's apartment. Same thing. He had tried out, but it didn't work. And I mean, like, the reason he was sending the police is it's minutes before kickoff. And he was like, go get this kid from his apartment or fraternity house or wherever he was. We need a kicker. One guy was hurt. Another guy got hurt pregame. He's like, we need a kicker. Guy's on his couch getting ready to watch the Tennessee game. Woo! Here for you. What? So it's still, folks, like I used to do Arena League. I did Arena League for almost a decade. There was a game against the Chicago Rush, I want to say it was. Pre-game, and like this is a real game. I mean, Heath, you can bet on it, and so that means it's real, correct? It's not scripted.
Correct.
A real live football, pro football game. Anyone with collegiate or professional kicking experience, please report to the field. Like, if you go look, there was a Georgia Force game, I don't know, about 15 years ago. Called a guy out of the stands. He's like, can you reach the net on kickoffs? Sure. He kicked. I don't know. He got a one-game pension. So that's the Arena League. Folks, this is Southeastern Conference. So it still does happen. The Otis Mounds thing doesn't even count. He was a scholarship running back. He was just redshirting. Otis Mounds, please report to the Auburn. That happened like 30 years ago, 35 years ago, whenever it was. He was a running back. He was like a real running back. He just wasn't playing that day. I'm talking about a guy on a couch going, yeah, I'm about to watch the Tennessee game because I'm not on the team. Well, you are today. So it's still just college football. What up, Heath?
So a couple of things. One, earlier in the program, obviously, you discussed the word on O.J. Simpson passing. I just wanted to remind anybody who did not see it. ESPN did a five-part documentary miniseries called O.J. Made in America. If you have never watched it, watch it. It is not some tawdry look at the trial and all that. It is a look at his full comprehensive life, and it's fascinating stuff. Seriously, if you have not watched it, make some time, watch it. It won
a lot of complexities and layers to that man's life, given what he represented and what who in American culture accepted him for a couple of decades and then the wild turn. It's just, it's a multi-layered story. There ain't no doubt about it.
Yeah, and it won an Academy Award. So, I mean, again, if you're somebody who's like, ah, I don't like ESPN, they don't give Academy Award documentaries just, you know, randomly to some folks who threw stuff together. No Stephen A. Smith clips in that documentary, I don't believe, there for ESPN. Also, word coming down from Tampa. USF has set a groundbreaking date for their stadium. It's going to be a 35,000-seat on-campus football stadium. That is going to be fascinating to see how that works. They have tried for years to make it go with the idea we play in a pro stadium in Tampa Bay's facility. And so, hey, if you're a player, who wouldn't want to play in an NFL stadium? Meanwhile, UCF moved on campus with their place about a decade ago, and it seems to have worked out a lot better for them. So now they're trying to catch up to UCF. But, Chuck, that does mean that at this point, the only school in the state that will not have an on-campus stadium and isn't going to anytime soon is the Miami Hurricanes. That message of play in the pro stadium didn't work for them, so it's not surprising it didn't work for USF. But the Canes, unlike USF, are going to be stuck with it, and it's probably going to continue to be pretty ineffective for them.
Yeah, I think it's a game changer, like a program change. I really do. That like Pitt, we play at the NFL Pittsburgh Steelers. It sucks. It sucks. It does. You know what the stadium in Fort Lauderdale is? Like really, really nice. It sucks to play there. We play in an NFL facility. That means you don't have one of your own where your students belong and your alumni belong, and it's really your stadium. You don't. When you throw a tarp over the word Steelers on Saturdays, kind of hollow.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Always all year, talk college football on Chuck Oliver Show. 9 states and 60 sticks. We do it every day, man. Been doing it for 10 years. Thank y'all for making that possible. So I believe we can say I have effectively bracketed types of spring games for this year. With Lane Kiffin, he said, I'm having fraternity boys on the field, and we're going to see if we can cover our wide receivers or that we can pass block. Like, he's turned it into the Grove Bowl games, like what the NFL did in Orlando. Penn State? Yeah, that's not what they're doing. In fact, if you wonder, Drew Aller, how is he against an elite defense? Well, he'll be going against one potentially on Saturday, his own, and it's kind of going to be a game, like a real game. At least that's what James Franklin's saying, and he said that since the beginning of spring practice, and he hadn't backed off of it. So a lot to talk about, quarterback, the structure of the game, all kinds of stuff. I want to welcome on right now from the Central Daily Times, State College's papers, Penn State beat guy, John Sauber. John, welcome. How's your Thursday, friend?
It's going well, Chuck. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you bringing a little clarity to this. Do I understand this correctly? James Franklin's like, no, we got a ball game on Saturday. This is not just playing grab Heine and running around and bringing fraternity guys on the field for water balloon fights. Talk about the structure of this game and maybe what the purpose is.
Yeah, I would expect this to be closer to a game, right, than, like you mentioned, the Pro Bowl game type situation. I don't think it's going to be anything like that. We'll see how long that lasts, right, because it's like any spring game. It's probably going to be 2 hours long. James said he's going to divvy up the talent pretty evenly, it seems. So it should be competitive. Again, all it takes is for one thing to go wrong for that to go away pretty quickly. But, yeah, I kind of expect this to be a fairly competitive scrimmage this weekend.
Yeah, and you don't – for instance, you don't want four starting defensive linemen against some backup offensive linemen. Like, nothing gets done at that point. Nobody can block. So he said he's going right to, like, stack the deck so that there are some even matchups. Talk about the debut of not one but two new coordinators, including one, at least the name people know from being a head coach. But talk about, like, maybe the idea to show a little of the DNA of the two new play callers.
Yeah, I'm most interested this weekend in seeing how Andy Kodelnicki does as the offensive coordinator, right? Because, you know, you mentioned Drew Aller before. This is everything for Penn State this year, how this offense does and what it looks like. I tend to think it's going to be a little more run-heavy. Of course, we're not going to see everything in the playbook this Saturday, but I do think there's going to be a good indication of what exactly they're trying to accomplish this year. And I would guess that it looks a little bit like what they were trying to do last year, but there's much more innovation. There's much more creativity. It's going to be an offense that has that big physical identity. They're trying to run the ball. They have two elite running backs that they want to get the ball to a bunch. And defensively, you know, you mentioned former head coach Tom Allen, yep, who was at Indiana for a while. They're going to bring that same physicality, right? They're looking to be a strong physical group. They really emphasize the ability to tackle, taking the ball away, and the effort they put in. So I think the physicality really is going to be the identity of this team this year.
All right, so let's talk about Drew Aller in particular. It's not fair probably to judge any quarterback on how to do against Michigan and Ohio State. Well, he didn't do well. But he didn't do well against Michigan and Ohio State. And if you're at Penn State, you kind of need to. Tell me what you personally believe, like the belief of Drew Aller is in that building.
Yeah, I think they still believe in him, right? And I think last year there were a lot of mitigating factors that kind of maybe not led him astray, but didn't put him in position to succeed. You know, with that said, it's not all that surprising that they made a change to offensive coordinator in the middle of the season, and things got better a little bit after that, right? I think you saw a little bit more free-flowing offense, a little bit less thinking from Drew, more just playing out there rather than feeling pressure. And you know, the wide receivers kind of weren't up to snuff either at that point. That's the other spot that they have to be better at. But at the end of the day, you know, those spots are kind of not completely taken care of, but they're in a better position this year. If he's not improved, I think, you know, that's when you kind of have to evaluate where exactly things are at.
Abdul Carter, I'm a big fan. I'm also a big fan of not screwing around with something that works, but they're moving him closer to the line of scrimmage, which, I don't know, getting closer to the quarterback?
Yeah, I think that's the end of the day. You know, James said this was an Abdul decision, that he wanted to move to defensive end. I think really you can put that athleticism anywhere on the field and it's going to play.
Stud.
But the closer you can get a guy like that to the quarterback, the more you can have him rushing the passer, the better. We saw when Micah Parsons was at Penn State, he didn't rush the passer as much. And you see him go to the NFL and have immense success there. So, you know, I think this is a situation where, I'm not saying Abdul Carter is Micah Parsons, but we're going to see that explosiveness, that athleticism off the line of scrimmage be more evident than it was even when he was at linebacker.
Yeah, that Micah Parsons, that's not real. Somebody that big that flies around and says, hey, the NFL, it's easy. That doesn't happen. All right, go to the back end, because Penn State's also been regularly depositing corners in particular in the NFL. Just talk about the secondary in general.
Yeah, I think this might be the deepest group on the team. There's some question marks there. There's three guys off the NFL and Daquan Hardy, Johnny Dixon, and Kalen King. Yep. Who all should hear their name called, you know, in a couple of weeks here. But they have a group of young guys that they really like in Cam Miller, Zion Tracy, Elliott Washington. And they supplemented them with, you know, Georgia transfer A.J. Harris, Florida transfer Jalen Kimber. And I think Harris, from all indications, is very much the real deal. I would be surprised if he's not a starter. And then at that point, you really just have to mix and match at corner the rest of the way. But at safety, things, you know, this is where that versatility comes in. I think they're going to be very strong back there, and that might end up being the group that makes this defense whole this year.
All right, take it big picture, because that's fun, and we're in the media, and we can do that. It was always, or it has been at least, well, he can beat everybody but Penn State and Michigan. And you can, I mean, Ohio State and Michigan. And while you don't like it, you're like, if you're going to lose to a couple teams, I get it. And, you know, finish third in the division or well, whatever. It's just, it's been, you know, kind of looking up at these two teams, and so we can't get to the playoffs. Are all, quote, all the excuses gone now that there are 12 spots that you don't have to beat Ohio State and Michigan in the same season to kind of reach the real postseason?
Yeah, and now they don't even play those two teams anymore every year, right?
Yeah.
This is kind of – there might not be a team in college football that benefits more from the expanded playoff than Penn State. And you're right. I think, you know, whether they're excuses or reasons or whatever you want to label them, they're gone now. This is a program that needs to consistently be in the playoff. And otherwise, I think, you know, most seasons might reasonably be viewed as failures. And I think that starts this year where, you know, Drew Aller's a junior. He's going into a second year as a starter. You have two high-end coordinators, a really good defense, and now is when it all kind of has to come together.
So whatever the job was, hey, Chuck, do you think James Franklin's interested? I was like, I think James Franklin's probably interested in a new contract from Penn State. And there are a lot of coaches who they get broken off when they get mentioned elsewhere. Give me your opinion of James Franklin's personal happiness and satisfaction level as Penn State head coach, because I actually buy it from him. I believe he is kind of, quote, home.
Yeah, I think he is at this point here for the long haul, right? We've seen other opportunities have arisen in the past. His name has been floated, like you mentioned, quite a bit in the past, but at this point, I have a hard time seeing him being anywhere other than here, unless things go by the wayside. You know, he seems happy. He always, you know, there's messaging in what he's saying when he doesn't necessarily pull his name publicly and say he's saying, you know, I'm assuming this situation, he wants something, right? He wants improved NIL, improved facilities, what have you. I think he's just trying to use the leverage he has to make the program he has better. And I think that's the right decision in those situations. And, you know, we've seen it sometimes turn into bigger things than it has, but more often than not, it's allowed him to kind of expand on the program that he's already built.
All right, Chop Robinson, I want you to look ahead because we got like five or six NFL teams in our footprint. Somebody NFL team gets Chop Robinson, and do you think I'm in the right ballpark, end of round one, beginning of round two, and what do you think he is as a Sunday guy?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see him sneak into the middle of the first round just because,
wow, okay,
you know, pass rushers tend to go earlier. We're going to see, I think, Dallas Turner go early. Outside of that, I think it's more dependent on what you like in a pass rusher. And with Chop Robinson, he is the more prototypical pass rusher, right? He is not going to be a guy that stops the run all that well when he first gets to the NFL. It's all about the first step with him. I think he could be a guy that eventually, you know, gets double-digit sacks in a season. Like, I think there is a Hassan Reddick comparison in there somewhere. But at the end of the day, for him, it is about rounding out the rest of his game to getting to the point where he can see the field enough to reach those heights and to get to those numbers.
One more guy, if you just give a quick commentary. Theo Johnson, he's kind of fun looking. What do you think an NFL team wants to do with him?
Yeah, I am a big fan of Theo Johnson. I think I wouldn't be surprised if he's the second or third tight end off the board, with Brock Bowers obviously being the first one. So I think he's just kind of that do-it-all weapon that you can put him anywhere and treat him essentially as a wide receiver at times, right? He is improving as a blocker.
Giant.
His entire career at Penn State. Yes, he is massive. And that with that comes a massive catch radius. And, you know, he's got the athleticism to back it up. So I think he's going to be, wherever he goes, he's got to be put in a spot where he can be used as a receiver first and let that blocking ability come later.
Absolutely agree, because I was like, he looks kind of comfortable split out, guys. And then I looked and I was like, he's 264. Yeah. It's a strange sight to see somebody at that size look so comfortable. It doesn't look like a big guy. He just kind of looks like a guy who's a little larger than the rest of the pass catchers. He's an interesting prospect. Brother, I appreciate the time today. It's always good. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
All right. Talking Penn State, John Sauber again, Central Daily Times, State College's paper, covers Penn State there. They've got a lot. They got an offensive tackle. They got Chop Robinson, as I said. They got Theo Johnson. If you don't know, he's a tight end-ish player. But he's big and athletic and can move. You know who Theo Johnson is? It's not a perfect comparison. Do y'all remember Arik Gilbert? Back in COVID, he was a true freshman. He's an 18-year-old kid at LSU. and he was a tight end that he just split out. No, he was a wide receiver who had been packaged as a tight end by God. He was like, all right, well, you're going to be bigger and thicker and just bulkier, and you're going to have the hips and the push, and you can get up under some pads. Oh, but you also run as a wide receiver, not like a wide receiver, or you run routes the same. We call the same plays for him as we do the receiver. No, Avery Gilbert was a receiver that was just a tight end. There's a big difference. Brock Bowers is a guy you kind of move around to make sure he doesn't get isolated in tight end responsibilities like protecting the quarterback. Like the, you know what I'm saying? There are different segments. I don't know what the segment is for Theo. That's a big tall. He's 6'6", 2 whatever he is, and he can move. So Brock Bowers first. If you tell me Theo Johnson, second, third, fourth off the board at tight end, somebody's going to get a really intriguing guy. You got to decide what you're going to do with him. But have fun. And as he said, receiver first. All right. My goodness. Look at the clock. We wrap up next.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
The fact that he's done so well in the dropback game as well, and understanding pressures and how it's being blocked and where to go to with the football, and then the ball placement, the accuracy, and then the drive just to go in there after practice and spend more time every single day at getting better. I just a very driven human being.
Miami Hurricanes head coach Mario Cristobal, and he is discussing his quarterback, and he is the quarterback at Miami, Cam Ward. You don't know about Cam Ward. He late of 1AA via the Palouse to Coral Gables and almost the NFL draft. That is modern day college football. Chuck Oliver Show continuing on this Thursday. Had a full up day on the Duncan Newsmaker line today. Appreciate Kennington Smith III joining us from The Athletic. Bama's got their spring game Saturday. He came on and talked that. Also on the Duncan Newsmaker line, Michael Borky from the Supertalk Mississippi Network. Grove Bowl games will take place in Oxford on Saturday. And then our tourist reporter for Penn State from the Central Daily Times. That's the state college paper yonder in Pennsylvania. John Sauber came on. So busy day on the Duncan Newsmaker line. I appreciate everybody making that possible. We were talking about Mario Cristobal there, and he was talking about Cam Ward. And Cam Ward actually spoke as well, which I guess, except for social media or name, image, likeness, this is like the first actual media session Cam Ward's done in a minute. So he entered the transfer portal this time as a grad transfer back in December. He declared for the draft. Didn't hire an agent. You're aware that you can still sacrifice your eligibility if you hire an agent. You hire someone to negotiate a contract to play professional football. That's the one thing you cannot do. To pitch products now? Absolutely. Play another sport professionally? Always been the case. But Cam Ward was thinking, well, I made the jump from Incarnate Word to Wazoo. From Wazoo to the NFL, I bet I can do that in Miami for a year. Impressive kid. If you haven't watched him, and there's a pretty good chance you had, and he's 6'2", about 225. He can be a runaround kid, or he can be a stand in the pocket, and I mean shoot rockets all around the football field. And that's what he is supposed to do this year. They have another quarterback coming in through the portal. It's not anybody who's going to push Cam Ward. But when this thing starts in the fall, it should be exciting to see how this offense takes off. And so Mario Cristobal giving a little discussion there ahead of their spring game, which if you're not aware of that, we were talking about it a little bit yesterday with the beat reporter from the Miami Herald. I'd seen the every year there's certain things that they just kind of, I guess, subconsciously they pop up on your calendar, your mental calendar. And one of the things that, like, I got, and I told you, this was not fair, because I like Will Muschamp a lot. I'm a big fan. When he was at Florida, it got to the point where I would watch them on Saturdays specifically to see how bad the offense would be. There was a Florida game in Knoxville And Treyon Harris somehow led a comeback. It was like 13-9 or something. Or 12. It was a weird score. He got on the mic afterwards. Yeah, sorry to disappoint all the Tennessee fans here today. I was like, you be you, Will. It's like, you look like crap. Your offense is horrid. You got lucky to come back and win, I don't know, a safety game, a field goal game. I don't know, catcher's interference. Something happened and you won and you still went chest out. I was like, good for you, Will. And I started watching. Then Jeff Driscoll transferred to Louisiana Tech and you're like, oh, maybe it was the offense's problem. I got in the habit of watching every spring, I realize, for the wrong reasons. Where's Miami going to have their spring game? It's been at a high school stadium. It's been at an intramural field. This year, it is on campus, which I guess you want. Recruiting, it's going to be a very limited attendance sort of thing. They have 500 permanent seats. They say maybe it'll seat 5,000. I don't think that if I was anywhere past like that initial 500, I probably really want to get deep into those portable bleachers. I think maybe I'll just stand or I'll be late or I'll eat the barbecue and the seafood and then I'll go home after the recruiting visit. But if you do want to watch Miami run around and throw the football and see Cam Ward, if you're a well-heeled donor, you can get one of the 500 seats and then they're going to open a few more for like recruits and families, et cetera. So you got to be either a bougie blue blood, you write a check, or you've got to be a 17-year-old with a 4.3. So, Heath, what's up on this Thursday for you?
Speaking of places doing stuff on a temporary basis, Northwestern is going to play the majority of their home games. We're talking about spring game. I don't even know if Northwestern's bothering with the spring game. But the next two seasons, they're going to play at what they're describing as a temporary structure being built by the school's athletic facility until their stadium's ready in 2026. Chuck, have you ever been to Ryan Field, the Northwestern home for the last two decades?
No, but I have seen it, and it's expensive property. I know that.
Yeah, I mean, look, maybe people will go there if they have a nicer, newer facility. I know they're trying to also see if they could do something to up the tailgating. I have been to about four or five games in Northwestern. I love going to Chicago, and if I can make a weekend of it and go see a college football game, I'll do it. Let's just say that there are a lot of places that have a little more dynamic atmosphere than Ryan Field. So who knows? Maybe the new stadium is going to solve their problems. But now this thing, Chuck, I mean, we're talking about basically a practice field with some bleachers next to it.
Yep.
I can't believe you're going to have Big Ten football, like Ohio State. They're not even going to have a press box. Like, how are you going to, you know, you're going to have like the broadcast crews called it from a trailer? Like, I don't know how they're going to make this thing work.
If you don't know, Ryan Field is the ancient place that they're replacing with the brand new multi-hundred-million-dollar crib on the water, okay? And so the idea has always been, if we replace the stadium, what can we do with the property? They have you're right. It's hard to find a place more nondescript and drab than Ryan Field, but they found a way to make the game day experience even less inviting for at least the next two seasons.
I'm just amazed. I mean, look, there are a lot of stadiums in Chicago. The soccer team had its own stadium. They're not playing in it anymore, but they had their own stadium. Obviously, we've talked about they've played games before at Wrigley Field when the Bears aren't playing their Soldier Field. If you are the Big Ten and you have the kind of contracts you have to broadcast games, that you have fan bases like Ohio State and Penn State and now you know, the West Coast schools that are going to want to come to games in Chicago, I just don't see how they're going to let them basically operate with a field that's a setup for a youth football game. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that's going to work, but that's the plan, at least.
It could look like a large high school playoff game, for instance.
Yeah, I'm amazed that they're letting them get away with that for any game that matters. Now, if you want to do it for, I don't know, Miami of Ohio in the opener, okay, maybe, but conference games? Come on. There's a lot of stadiums available. Go find one. Also, a little bit of news from Brian Kelly today. Kelly saying the LSU will not pursue any positions in the transfer portal except for one. Care to take a stab, Chuck?
Are they looking for an experienced quarterback?
Nope. He says defensive tackle. The only place they're going to look.
So, yeah.
Now, the key could be the phrasing, too. We won't pursue. That doesn't mean that if, I don't know, there's some stud who played at some other school, has a Louisiana background and says, hey, I want to come home, that Brian Kelly's going to hang up the phone on him. But it's just interesting when there's so much expectation for next week and how aggressive everybody's going to be on the portal. It sounds like at least LSU is not choosing to be nearly as aggressive as some places are expected to be. If Kelly is serious about this, that defensive tackle is the only place they're looking.
Wonder about their numbers, because like Penn State, we were just talking, they're actually over 85 right now.
Yep.
And so they would like to go shopping, but they already have to get under. We've talked about the defensive tackle thing there, and that was an easy answer. I should have gotten that one. They got the kid from Wisconsin, and they've actually been pretty. It's pretty well understood. They may want another two. I don't know. Three tackles. They just don't have the depth there, and they don't have depth. They may not have the starters there. See, that's the issue. They may look at the two guys that are at the top of the depth chart and go, those would be some pretty good rotation or wave guys. So, all right, wraps it up on a Thursday. Me and David and Heath and all of you, 22 hours from now, we'll all be back with Recharge Batteries right here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at atlantaramjack.com.